woman one time looked at me in the face and said, "Don't you think it's crazy that the Titanic sunk in the Titanic Ocean?" I went, "What?" I was at the bar the other day and someone tried to tell me that Transylvania wasn't a real place.
It is a real place. It's in Romania.
Yeah.
100%.
I was like, "What do you think? This is like Narnia? What's wrong with you?
How could you grow up watching vampire movies and not know where the real Dracula is?" Captain Planet's a villain, by the way. He's not a good guy. He calls people littering scumbags. And that's his deal.
I like that.
Dude, I love it.
My brother and my sister's boyfriend gave me a sex talk when I was 12, and they did it with Hustler magazines. It was probably one of the worst conversations of my life.
Working Perspectives Podcast. I'm Matt Lavelle. He's J-Dub Justin Richardson. On the show today, we have the author of the book American Dysfunction. His name is Ryan Rex. This guy was introduced to me from a friend of mine and former guest of the show, friend of the show, which I'll tell you about in the episode. I had a blast. This guy was so much fun, really awesome, really open. Great, like, crazy stories he's had. He has really some tough stories. He's seen some tough things that kids shouldn't have seen and been through some tough stuff, and really, really, you know, open and shared with us, and was really happy he did. And his book sounds just incredible. Really excited to take a crack at it, but I had a lot of fun. Justin, what do you think?
Great. He's from around here. He's from around here kind of stories.
Yep.
He's funny. He's got a good old story for you.
Yeah.
I think you're going to like it.
If you were to say that he had a jib, and would you say you like the cut of that jib?
I mean, I've seen a lot of cuts on a lot of jibs.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good cut, and it's a pretty good jib.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
I'm not one to, like, judge cuts on jibs. Like, I'm not saying I'm a professional jib cutter judge. But I've seen a lot of jibs, and I've seen a lot of cuts, and I can say this is a pretty good jib and a pretty good cut.
Amen.
A pretty good cut and a pretty good jib.
Either way, you're right. When you're right, you're right. And you're always right. So, yep, like we said, we're here. We're talking about American Dysfunction is the book by the author Ryan Rex. You can find a link to the book in the description of this episode. You can also follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanRex31, on Instagram at RPRex78, and on Facebook at RPRex. Without any further ado, we have the author of American Dysfunction, Ryan Rex. I'm Matt Lavelle. He's J-Dub Justin Richardson. This is the Working Perspectives Podcast. Enjoy. All right. Hello and welcome to the Working Perspectives Podcast. I'm Matt Lavelle, coming today by Jalen Dub Justin Richardson. Our guest today on the show is the one and only Ryan Rex. Let me tell you about Ryan Rex. On a couple of years ago, so let's go back a little bit, Justin. June 6th, 2021. You know it, you love it, you remember it.
I believe that's D-Day.
Actually, I'm lying. It was June 8th, 2021. either way, June 8th, 2021, we had a guest on the show, King Malik Harris, owner proprietor of King's Corner Boxing. He was on the show. Great dude. Knew him from when I was training under Harry, Harry Joe Yorgi. Me and him were training partners together. Great guy. Big fan
is
of him.
His first name Harry, or is that just like an adjective?
No, his first name is Harry.
Okay. All right. I didn't know.
Honestly, that could be my name, right? I could have been, fight next, the Harry Matt Lavelle.
Harry, you know? Matt Lavelle.
Yeah. Could have been,
about
but
the,
it wasn't.
Yeah.
So either way. Was, you know, Malik been in touch with him. He opened a new space. Really good guy. Really proud of him. Really happy for him for what he's done. He hits me up the other week. He says, "Hey, I got a guy." And when Malik says he's got a guy, it means he's got a guy. He's like, "I got a guy. you got to get this guy on your show. And I was like, well, if you say it, then I got to do it. Because I'll tell you, if it's come recommended by the king himself, then it's a must have. So
it's on the show. When I do it, I go, hey, Matt, I got a guy. And you go, is he going to show up? I go, I don't know. He doesn't have an email. But
yeah, you struck. I mean, he wants to
do the show via payphone. Is that okay? Also, yeah. We have to supply him with dimes.
Yeah, yeah. The only time that you've had a guest come through was Mickey Batts, and he's been on 4 times. So yeah. you've come through, but it's the same guy 4 times. Either way. So King Malik Harris hit me up. He said, you got to have this guy on the show. He's got a great message. He's got a great story. And he's promoting a great book, American Dysfunction. We'll have a link to that book in the description of this episode. Highly suggest you check it out. But without any further ado, on the show, we have the only one and only Ryan Rex. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Matt, Justin, it's awesome, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. Thanks for being here, brother. Super excited to get into this. So, start of the show, we like to do a little thing called the disputed questions because we want to get to know the person you are. You can either be like J-Dub, be a dweeb, or you can be like me and be a great person, an upstanding individual that's full of character and compatibility. So, first question. What
like
movie
dogs.
Do you think is better? I don't like dogs, all right? I don't like dogs. I don't like cats. But the thing is, okay, let's talk about it. You want to talk about it? We'll talk about it, okay? Yeah, my daughter is 4 years old, and since she's been 2 years old, she's been able to say that she wants to be a veterinarian, okay? And so she wants animals, and she always wants a dog. And I've repeatedly told her, you try and bring a dog home, I'm going to drown it in front of you, okay?
That's
not happening.
Horrifying.
Not happening in my house. All right. Either way, I don't want
crazy
be,
thing.
I don't want to be the owner of an animal. I don't. Okay. Either way, Ryan. First question: what movie do you think is better, The Godfather Part One or The Godfather Part Two?
I got to go with Part One.
Correct.
Got to go with Part One. Just because I'm not a huge mob movie fan, but the original with the origin story of Robert De Niro's character, and I guess it was, you know. I don't know. I can't even say who the hell else was in the movies besides those guys. Robert, wait, come on. Let's go back. Robert, you put numbers about Robert De Niro. Who else?
Al Pacino.
James Caan.
James
Caan. Plots
it too. Robert Duvall.
De Niro's in the second one.
De Niro's in the second one.
I didn't want to correct you,
but it's all right.
I appreciate it.
I think you like the second one.
By the way, I'm not.
What's your favorite movie?
Gladiator. Like, I'm more of an action movie type guy.
I was talking to my brother. Remember the dude with the lion helmet with the face shield that like slides down? How cool was that?
He got his foot taken off in the middle.
Yeah,
of that
he got the thing through his foot. Yeah, he was supposed to be like the undefeated guy that they brought back to go against Maximus, right?
What'd they call him? The creeping death or something crazy like that. Maximus turned around and hit him with a spike on the end of the axe.
Oh, dude. Awesome. That was in the tigers came out in the middle of the fight.
Dude,
that was a great, I mean, the great movie. They're apparently coming out with a second one. You've heard this, right?
I have.
Ryan?
Yeah. I've heard.
Have you ever been to Italy and been to the Colosseum? Either of
so
you?
So when I walked into the Colosseum, I thought it was going to be much bigger than it actually is. It's like the size of a high school football stadium. And when you're walking in that place, it's like you can almost hear the shouts of the old ghosts. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's just a place that's alive. Like, it has a pulse.
Well, you know, they used to fill it with water.
Yeah, when I went, it was like the Gladiator entrance tour. So we went in the same entrance that the gladiators would have gone in, and they take you like onto the floor of the Colosseum, right? The crazy thing is this, right? Like, how they built it is insane. And I would say, I mean, I don't know, Ryan. I feel like it's a little bigger than a high school stadium because it sat like 20,000, you know? So But the crazy thing was, to build it, they were bringing in, like, shipping in marble from Africa. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What's that?
I wouldn't doubt that. All the slaves that the Romans had, they brought in whatever they wanted. They used to take obelisks all the way up to England from their area of the world. Like, the things that they accomplished were just ridiculous.
Incredible. All without indoor plumbing. Wild, right?
They created indoor plumbing. They did.
Did they really?
That's where the word plumber comes from. was the it means lead in Latin, and they were the workers of lead, and they were the ones who created indoor plumbing, believe it or not. No and they kidding, say that's what bro. Attributed to the end of the part of what contributed to the fall of the Roman Empire was all the lead in their blood, because they put it in there.
Yeah. Big time on the lead, huh?
Yeah, man.
That's going to be a downfall of us as Bluetooth, guys. It's our lead, you know?
Lead got a lot of Irish kids with paint chips. Early 50s. Irish kids just eating paint. It got them.
My old boss said it tasted like candy.
They loved it.
Lead paint chips.
Babe.
They thought they escaped the potato famine. They came right over here and just started eating paint.
Yeah. They're all about it. No. I mean, good on them too, you know? So nice. Let's keep it moving then. So you said you're not a big fan of the mobster, gangster, mafia movies. Do you have a favorite one?
Do I have a favorite one? Goodfellas, I feel like, is too cliche. I remember seeing Donnie Brasco in the movie theater with my buddies when I was a teenager. And Johnny Depp was in that one. And I think that's a highly underrated movie. Because that was based off a true story, man. Like, that was real shit.
Well, that was and Pacino's in that also. And Michael Madsen, right?
That's right. He plays Pacino Sonny played Red, a character named Lefty.
Yeah. It was Michael Johnny Madsen, Depp, Pacino, Michael Madsen, underrated as far as an actor go. He is phenomenal, dude. Really,
he's in Pulp Fiction, was he not?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, he plays Mr. Blonde, right?
Oh no, that's Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs. He was supposed to play John Travolta's character in Pulp Fiction, but he did not, for whatever reason.
Really?
But he did. I love Travolta in that movie.
Vincent, oh, dude, that movie changed. That Vincent movie Vega. Saved Travolta's
Vega. Yeah, I couldn't think of it. I was like, I knew he had a cool last name. Couldn't think.
Yeah, dude. Remember, he came in that one. He was a little overweight. His hair was long, but he still had it when he's dancing Marcellus Wallace's wife.
Most important life lesson I ever learned.
Saved his career.
Don't leave your gun on the counter when you take a shit.
Yeah.
Take your gun in to poop with you always.
Think about like the careers that movie resurrected. You know, like Uma Thurman got her off on on the front page of everything, right? Harvey Keitel. This was just another boss, you know what I'm saying? Like, came out big, dude. Travolta was doing, Look Who's Talking for, you know what I mean? Like, his career was done, and that saved his career, right? Bruce Willis, he was like, diehards had kind of run their course, he was looking for something that saved him, right? Like, dude, big time.
Ving Rhames.
Ving Rhames was in it. Yeah.
Marcellus Wallace. Yeah. And then I think Willis was coming off of Hudson Hawk, which was one of the worst reviewed movies of all time or something like that. Do you remember that one?
Bruce Willis was.
He played some sort of like an art thief or something like that. And the movie was terrible. Nobody watched it. And then I think he did Pulp Fiction not too long after. It saved him, just like you said.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. Nice. All right. So let's keep it moving. Next question I got. When it comes to eating Cheetos, are you crunchy or are you puffed?
Puffed.
You hearing this, Justin? You hearing this?
Haven't had
been
one
a while since we had a puffer on here. Been a while.
Nobody else is a puff besides me.
I'll tell you, I would have to say Godfather Part 1 is probably the majority answer. But when it comes to crunchy or puffed, well, there was a puffissance, right? Where we were getting puffs left and right. It was insanity the amount of puffs we were getting. And then that stopped. Cold turkey. And we ain't been getting puffs in a minute. No one's been puffing. I can't tell you the last puff.
But
can't
the first like 50 were all crunchy. And then we got some puffs and it went puff heavy. I've always been, it's the Utz cheese ball in the barrel with the purple lid.
What cheese balls? What brand is that, Justin?
The proper pronunciation Utz potato chips.
You're wrong. You're wrong.
I'm not wrong.
You're a wrong person. You're a wrong person. Your person is wrong.
Utz.
Either way, let's keep
PA it brand representing Utz family, right?
Yeah, Sodders, Utz. I think. Yes, you're right. Utz. Yeah. That's how. Yeah. Now you got it. Yeah. What about pancakes or waffles?
I'm going to go with pancakes.
Sure you are. Because you're a decent human being and a model.
I'm going to go with pancakes. Love them. Make them. Eat them. Any kinds. Blueberry.
So simple.
Yeah. They are good. I mean, I'm not going to knock a flapjack. All right. I'm an honest, hardworking American male. I love a flapjack as much as anybody else.
Excellent. So, weird thing about waffles, I prefer them on the boardwalk with ice cream, right? When they're right in front of you, you get a little sandwich and you crunch into it. Oh, dude, it's the best.
Dude, did you ever? So, do you know Peddler's Village up in New Hope?
Yeah.
There's a gimmick up there. There's a waffles and ice cream store up there, and they do the pearl sugar waffles. Bro, I'll tell you, man. Pearl sugar. So, do you know what a sugar cube is?
Sure do.
Okay, imagine a sugar, a pearl of sugar. So they make waffles that have like sugar pearls in them. And it'll knock your face right on your butt. It is incredible. But yeah, big fan. Big fan. So very good. Waffle, let's keep it on moving. Yeah. So, dude, waffles and ice cream too. I'll tell you, I moved here from California when I was 7 years old. Then the following summer was my first summer here, and I was able to go to the public pool near me. Shout out 4th Street Pool, land of the free, home of the brave. And when I was there, I was able to indulge in waffles and ice cream for the first time, and it changes your life.
What? Heavenly. You Lansdale animals had waffles and ice cream at your food stand?
And it was the Napoleon gimmick, too, or the Neapolitan gimmick, it's where it was crazy. Like a vanilla, a strawberry, and a chocolate. You know what I'm saying? It was like one of those slices. So you'd get two waffles, and you'd sandwich it with the Neapolitan gimmick in between. Bro, living life.
If you find a Cold Stone, they mix up the Neapolitan, put it on a waffle for you. Dude,
it's
good.
How good is Cold Stone?
I mean,
the Lord took ice cream from me. But I still like drive past a Cold Stone every once in a while. I think about just dabbling, you know?
Yeah.
Just doing it.
I love too. I'll get there like you know how they have like a menu of like what you can order? I'm like, yeah, make me one of the brownie blondie destroyer 27s. I don't know what you call it, but yeah, one of them. Pretty great. So all right, let's keep it moving. So you said pancakes, you said puff, and you said Godfather Part 1. Let's keep it moving. Who do you like better, Bill Murray or Chevy Chase?
Bill Murray.
Almost had
it. Going with Murray. I'm way bigger fan of his movies.
Yeah, agreed. No, that's the right answer, Ryan. Very much the right answer. Yeah. And then, when it comes to an amusement park, are you a water park when it comes to a theme park, are you a water park or an amusement park?
Amusement park.
Right. Right choice. You want to be dry. You want to ride some coasters, you know? You want to maybe hit a log flume, you know, Dorney Park, going to Dorney Park over here. Love a good Dorney Park.
I go to a water park. I want to go on the beach and have a drink 10 minutes later because I'm done.
Right.
I'm out.
You're done. Yeah. Nothing like cracking a cold one on the beach, you know.
I will meet you in the middle of the log flume is one of the best rides.
It's a great ride. Great ride. Especially if it's a hot day because then you get a little spritz. You kind of cool off. You get a little mist. And you're like, oh, he's hit the flume. The flume's cooled off. It's good. You know? So fun flume. Stuff. Love a good log flume. Let's keep it moving. Do you game? Are you a gamer? You hitting the stick?
Nah, okay, not lately. I got out of it. My kid's a gamer. You know, and I passed the torch to him.
Right.
But when you did game, did you have a PlayStation or an Xbox?
Dude, I'll tell you what. When I got a Nintendo when I was 10 years old, my life changed. And that was like the greatest thing that ever happened to my childhood.
Yeah.
You know, playing Super Mario for the first time and Mega Man and Zelda, Castlevania, Tetris, Tecmo Bowl, all those.
Remember the pad for Tetris or for Nintendo? It was like
the running pad?
Yeah, where you could, like, you would do the sprint and, like, the first one you would do against, like, a bear and then the next one would be against, like, deer and then the other one would be against a cheetah and you're like, damn, the cheetah's fast! Bro.
And you'd be hurtling. You'd be hurling in the race, hurl? And you'd kick forward and hit something.
Yeah. You could do duck hunt. Duck hunt was fun.
With the floor pad in the Olympic game, you would do the long jump. So you would tap, 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 tap for the jump part.
Yeah.
And then jump outside the pad, legs wide. Yep. So then you think you're flying in the air and then jump back on the pad. Yep. I could do like a 27-foot standing long jump. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. You broke Carl Lewis's record and shattered it easily.
Did you guys have the power glove? The most useless controller of all time?
Did you have one?
Dude, I had the power glove and it didn't work.
Do you remember the long rifle boy that was for Nintendo? It was a rarity and I knew someone who had
I think that was for Super Nintendo.
It was like a rifle. The power glove.
It was like a bazooka almost.
Yes, it was the one I'm thinking of. But the power glove I always want. I've never even put a power glove on.
Dude, they have one at the game store in Lansdale. If you head over there, there's one on display and you can buy it for like $50. And no matter what, you just wear it. It's not going to do anything. You can wear it around.
Left hand or right hand?
I believe it was right.
I guess it's left. Is it right?
I don't know. Maybe it was left. I can't say, man. I forget. That's a good question.
Dude, I might buy it just to wear it. Like, it would look cool. Like, it's a cool looking glove. Like, let's be honest, you know?
Yeah.
Man.
Like, Mr. Claw from Inspector Gadget, he had a cool hand.
Or it looks like part of the costumes from Dune. You know what I mean? Because the rest of their armor looks like that.
Yeah.
You got to save your water.
Yeah, dude.
Ooh. Dude, so what would you, I mean, what would be more of a prized item, the power glove or a talk boy? I've always wondered that, you know?
I don't even know what a talk boy is.
You weren't Home Alone? You don't remember Home Alone 2?
No, I don't remember that
one. Thing you had a talk into. Boy. It was pretty sweet.
No, I had the Game Boy.
Well, okay. What would you rather? I mean, this is, I think this is a no brainer, but would you rather have the power glove or a piece of the aggro crag?
Power glove.
Oh, wow. Because
I don't know what the hell the aggro crag is. What is that, dude?
You, don't remember, you don't remember Guts? Do you have it?
What was the reporter's name? Do you remember the chick? What was her name?
Going to and check out the leaderboard. Mo.
Yeah. Mo's a babe.
British babe.
Remember Guts? It was like the kids' version of American Gladiators.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Was it on Nickelodeon or like Channel 9 or something?
Nickelodeon.
I remember Funhouse. You guys remember that one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. DB Funhouse. Yeah.
No, there was a game show called Funhouse. It was on right after Dino Saucers and Cops. They used to have a cop, like a the cop who got shot in the chest, and they made him into a cyborg. His name was Bulletproof.
Dude, do you remember the show Dinosaurs?
Yeah,
remember that show? It was like Roseanne with dinosaurs. It was great.
Dude, that was a
not
funny
the
show
mama,
that came
not
out.
The mama, right?
Yeah,
that was a hitter. Okay, let's keep it moving. Then last question, most important question. When it comes to eating wing, are you a drum or are you a flat?
I'm a drum.
Yeah,
a drum.
You are.
And I like them with sauce only. I don't like them. I don't like to dip them in blue cheese.
You don't do the
ranch.
Cheese?
No, I just like the hot sauce these days, dude.
Sure. You're a grown-ass man.
I'm a taste. Yeah, grown-ass man. I don't need any dippers.
Grown-ass man. You don't need no dipping shit. Hell no.
I'll dip the celery in the dipper, right?
Right. You dip a veg in there. Sure.
I'll dip veggies in the
Yeah. Dude, you know what I love? Sometimes. You know what's great about living in Montgomeryville besides, like, the no crime and the great tax rate and the fact that we're near everything and that it's great for raising a family and the homes are really great and the average income is six figures. Like, one of the great things about living in Montgomeryville, which is where I live and where you live too, Ryan, not you though, Justin, but one of the great things about living in Montgomeryville, some would say the creme de la creme of Montgomery County. But either way, we live near Spatola's Pizza, and every once in a while, dude, just get the hankering for a slice. Good time.
I gotta
just
get
thought
in
I would
there.
Bring that up. It's a pretty great place.
Riga Pizza, they just moved in. Not so bad.
What is it?
Riga Pizza, they just moved in. They're Riga right Pizza. Near where the Army Navy store used to be in that strip mall where where there's a Wawa on the end. I don't know if you know.
Yeah. Like that impossible strip mall to get into? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it the one over by where Chocho's on, where Ariana's used to be?
That's right. I miss Ariana's so much.
Ariana's was so good, dude.
Oh, dude, they were great.
That was a great spot. Great date spot, too.
Yeah,
great. Their food was phenomenal. I miss Ariana's.
They were open during COVID the whole time.
Yeah. That's a shame. That's like one that, like, I hated to see go because I really enjoyed that place. They had great food. Oh, so good. Dude, and they would give you like pasta. Pasta was your side. Like, it was just the best, dude. They had great specials. Really big fan. That's a shame to see him go.
Yeah, I think mom who ran that got sick a couple of times and they shut it down. But it's a shame because everybody loved it, whoever went in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But either way, let's keep it moving. So we're here to talk about American dysfunction. Really, really excited to get to know or to talk about this book, and we'll have a link in the description of this episode. Highly suggest everyone checking it out. It's a fiction novel that it kind of addresses or has it based around the opioid opioid crisis in a way, right? But I mean, obviously, Ryan here will explain it more. He is the author. So, Ryan, let's talk. What do you got? So let's start from the beginning. What was the inspiration for American dysfunction?
The inspiration was growing up in a dysfunctional blue collar house, right?
Right.
So my parents got divorced when I was 4, and I moved every 6 to 9 months up until I was like 13 years old, right? Mm-hmm. My mom got remarried 4 or 5 times in that. It was 4. She got married a 5th time after that. But you know, we had some nasty step parents in the mix there. And I base a lot of the characters off of that portion of my life, because the main character in the book experiences the same thing, where his stepdad beats up his mom in front of him. And it's a very real story. When, yeah, you know, I was 9, I saw my stepdad beat up my mom in front of me. I came down to watch cartoons on a Saturday morning. You know, I was going to come down and watch Ninja Turtles. I had my stuffed animal, my Roger Rabbit stuffed animal, and I went downstairs and I found him on the couch, like punching my mom in the face. And I, you know, he flicked me off his back, and then I ran upstairs and dressed in my ninja costume and came down like I was going to do something. I was just this little kid trying to act tough. And I remember looking through the staircase at him, because we had a railing and you could see through. And I remember just being terrified and just feeling powerless. And I put that in a book, because that was the genesis of this book, was kind of stories like that I needed to get out. And I didn't know how. Like, there were so many years where I try to tell somebody a story like that, we're on topics and stuff. People are like, ah, it's bullshit, never happened to you. And people say that. And so finally I just dumped it all out. I'm like, you know what, if I can make this fiction, I can tie it all together, and I can really do something not just like cathartic, but something fun with it. Cause I need to like have more fun in my life. I need to remember happy times, because there's many decades in my life where I only remember negative shit, and I need to, people need to get over that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a nice, we have such a beautiful world, and it's hard to appreciate that when you're stuck in your own mind half the time.
Could not agree more. You know, experiences are what they are, and you have to take what you can from them, but you can't only focus on the negative. You're right. You have to remember the positive. You have to remember the good times as well. Dude, I'll tell you, you know what's one of the craziest things I just remember seeing? And they said that, I talked to a cop, and he said that this is very common. I remember one of the first times I saw, you know, a situation like that. And it wasn't with my parents. That never happened with my parents. But I saw a situation like that, and I just remember that when the police stepped in, the mom, who had just gotten like the tar knocked out of her, was like fighting like a banshee to save this guy. And I was like, you got to be out of, like, to me, I was just like, it blew me away. I was like, legit, she was busted like crazy. And this guy, and she was like going after the cops, trying to say like, don't take him away. You know what I mean? Like, sticking up for the guy that just whooped on her. You know what I mean? Like, I could not believe it. You know, it's just, I mean, you know, the heart, love is a crazy thing, but relationships are wild, but you know, it's tough. And I'll tell you, dude, for you to you want to protect your mom and things like that, that at that age, man, it's a lot to ask for a kid to see that and go through that. And that's tough, dude. Really, really
tough.
Yeah.
I just remember after I jumped on his back, and he flicked me off, I fell into the fireplace. I remember them getting up, and she kicked him right in his balls, dude. And I have never seen a grown man cry before that. She got him good. But there's been more than a few battered women in my family, and I've witnessed it, and I've heard about it. And he just, it's like a vicious cycle, and or a vicious circle, whatever the term is. It's just, it just keeps coming back around, because people, it's whether they refuse to learn their lesson or they're not like strong enough to say, I deserve better. I don't know.
Yeah. I think too, it's like, it's tough to say, like, I think like if you're a girl that sees that happen, like, in a way, I think it might be like all, because I've been in some situations where I was like, this bitch wants me to hit her. You know what I mean? Like, you're doing this intentionally to want me to do this, and I'm not going to do it, you know? And in my mind, I'm like, this is wild. And then like to know, like, they've been in that situation before, you know, like, it's just their personality in a way. And I wonder, like, their moms went through the same thing. And I don't know if it's maybe a thing that that's just how all they know, that they think that that's the type of love that they deserve. And it's not true. And it's unfortunate, like you're saying, that, you know, they get kind of stuck in that realm or that sphere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, guys are like that too. I mean, my dad had he had three marriages, and even the receptionist that was working for him, they get verbally abusive, and, you know, and guys tend to laugh it off because it's like, we're men, whatever, it's just a woman. But when people talk to you like that, they end up talking to people in your family that way. They think it's all right. Yeah. And they start talking and they behave that way toward your customers. And yeah, it's just the glazing over of abuse just for the sake of being a man. I mean, it's like this woman's crazy. You know, I just remember I had my dad's secretary called me a loser one time, and like she meant it. I'm like, I'm the only one with an education in this family. Like, come on, man. Like my brother just because I went back to the family business and I was helping out, and she and I got in an argument, and there were some very nasty things that were said, and she basically said, "I wish you were dead. I wish your brother was back because we lost my brother to an opioid to an overdose." And that was a crushing blow because I was like, "Man, my brother really fucked up, dude. Like, how people say this stuff to me and they feel like it's all right? This is like." There was a couple of years over the past like 4 or 5 years where I'm like, is she right? Like, what the fuck, man? But I mean, you got to get over that stuff and keep moving forward. But it's hard, man. When those people in your family, they become like dominant voices, it's hard to shake that shit off. You know?
Yeah, you're right. You're very much. And plus too, like, you know, one thing I had trouble personally with was like overvaluing other people's opinions on things too. Where it's like, there's a lot of times where someone will say something, I was like, you're full of shit, right? And you're just saying shit to say it. But there is times where it's like someone, you might have valued their opinion, and, you know, and then when they say something like that, it's almost shocking where it's like, wow, you know, I used to care what this person thought, and if they think that, then is it true? You know what I mean? Like, you kind of, you second guess in a way, you know?
Yeah, and emotions hurt, dude. I don't care what anyone says. Like when somebody pierces your heart, it's like it can be a devastating blow.
I think too, it's like for men, like you're saying, it won't, you know, maybe you won't hit it, won't hit it first, but eventually it does sting. And eventually if you focus on it, it does hurt for sure.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. So the catalyst was maybe, you know, like the start of it was an initial story of seeing your, you know, the altercation between, was it your dad or your stepdad? And your mom?
It was my stepdad. Dad had been, you know, my mom and my dad had been divorced for years at that point. The only time my dad never gotten into it, he caught me smoking a cigarette back when I was like 16 years old. It was a Tuesday night, just like tonight. I was outside. It was 10 o'clock at night in my underwear smoking a cigarette because I smoked back then. I played lacrosse. I don't know what I was thinking. Maybe that's why I chose the goalie position, so I didn't have to run. But I was probably drinking that night because we weren't well-behaved kids drinking on school nights and doing whatever. I think he got pissed off and he threw me around a little bit that night. But that was the only time that Dad and I were too. But he was not a woman abuser. He just welcomed very vocally abusive women into our lives. And I think that was what his problem was.
How many total step-parents you got?
Dude, I got mom's on number 6 right now. He was a nice guy. But between there's nine marriages.
Wait, you're so how many? On her sixth marriage, you're saying?
Well, I guess I'm counting my mom and my dad twice. So my mom's had five. My mom's had six marriages. We think she's married to the sixth one, but we're not sure. So we'll say I had five stepdads, and she lives with another man now. It was very nice. And then, so that's five. And then my dad was married 3 times. So altogether, it was.
Was he married to your mom twice?
No, so let's say it was 7 because I'm counting them twice.
So then how many step siblings do you have?
None that I've spoken to since any of those divorces happened.
Once the divorce happens, gone.
Actually, there's a character named Robert in this book. I had a stepbrother named Robert who was the son of the guy I caught hitting my mom that time. And apparently he got... After our parents got divorced, I was like 9 or 10. I never saw him again. And I heard he got kidnapped. And I don't know if his dad ever found him or not, but he was one of those kids that got abducted. And I never heard the end of the story. So in the book, I have a character named Robert who got kidnapped, but his dad found him wandering the streets alone because his mother left him abandoned. And I hope something like that happened. Like, I hope his dad found him and everything's all right, but I don't know for sure. So he was just one out of probably 7 or 8 stepbrothers. I only had stepbrothers. I never had a stepsister, and I've never seen or heard from any of them again.
Dude, legit, my biggest nightmare is that happening. You know, someone taking my kid. Legit, my biggest nightmare.
Dude, just people in and out of my life like it never even happened. You know what I mean? Like, there are years of my life. I don't have any pictures of these people. It's almost like they never existed.
Yeah, and you lived with them, right?
I lived with them for years. This was the first 12 years of my life. And it's like it never happened because there's nothing, there's no evidence of it whatsoever.
My mom went on a couple dates in between my stepdad. And I remember meeting one. She was dating this one guy and he had two kids. And me and my brother both looked at my mom. I was like, those kids are so goddamn weird. They were so, I mean, we're pale Irish kids. And these were the pale, they were the palest children I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, dude, you can't date this guy. And that stopped. And then she dated another guy who didn't have kids. And then my stepfather has three kids. So like introduced to like five random children, but like the crapshoot of what you get as far as step siblings. Oh, I can't imagine going through it so many times.
Oh man.
Having like a new like person be like, hey, are you normal? Like, no, well, no, because my parents divorced. Like, sick. Yeah, same. My parents are divorced. Were your parents off? I was like, yeah, dude, my parents are divorced.
Yeah.
I had sure, one of them try to take me out. My dad married this woman. She had three sons, and they wanted, man, the biggest one out of all. He's a bouncer at one of the bars down the shore when he was in college. And dude, he almost fucked me up one night. Boy, I got into it with him, and it was bad. I'm like, Dad, what are we doing here? Like, why are these things happening to our family? I don't get it. It was bad. And that was the last time I ever talked to that guy. I think she and my dad got divorced like less than 6 months later, and three other brothers, stepbrothers, just gone. Never saw them again.
Wow. And you've never like run into them somewhere? It's just like,
if I did, I don't think they would talk to me because of what happened between me and the oldest one.
Wow. What, I mean, was it just you got guys being guys and then shit happens? Shit,
because, like I said, I was never, there was drugs involved. And I was always a guy who just, like I said, I saw my brother go through some shit when I was young. So like when people started doing coke and stuff like that in high school and college, like I was uninterested because it affected me so much. Cause I saw my brother go into a seizure when I was 10, and you know, people start doing blow in the bathroom. And it's like, hey Ryan, I left you a line cut up under the magazine. Like, oh, snorted, my brother snorted, we're all getting fucked up. I'm like, I'm good, dude. Well, what do you mean? What if I tell you this story? I'm going to punch you in the fucking face if you don't snort. I'm like, ah, well, go ahead and punch me in the fucking face. I'm just not interested. So, I mean, that's kind of what started the fight, was me not like falling in line and like doing what I was told. I'm like, this isn't how shit works. Like, we're supposed to be cool, bro. And it's like, well, you know, you're going to act like my brother would do whatever I tell him to when I tell him to. Like, you're going to do that too. And I'm like, well, I'm probably not going to. So we're just
gonna, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that guy sounds like a punk though. Also,
a tough situation, boy. Oh my God.
He must be new at this whole drug thing, because I'll tell you, when I was doing drugs, they were my fucking drugs. I'll tell you that.
I've never threatened anyone with a good time.
I always had this weird notion, like if I got, like if I went in there and snorted that blow, like I was told to, he would have planted it in my bag and went up and told my parents, like, oh, Brian's getting us all to coke. And they would have blamed it on me or some shit like that. Cause that's some things that would happen to me and my family. Like, that's some fucking, that's some shit that I've had to deal with. And I kind of smelled trouble. And I'm like, ah, dude, like, it's irony. Like, I smelled coke. But yeah, no, it was one of those things. I had this moment. I'm like, something bad. Like, no matter what I do here, something bad's going to happen. So I just chose the lesser of the two evils, you know?
Smart, man. Hey, dude, that's a great choice to make. So in the book, right, you know, you have like some stories that are based on real life experiences, but it is a fiction. But one of the big things that, you know, I guess, does it kind of center around what happened to your brother? Is that a big catalyst in the book?
So in the book, I had to incorporate my brother because he was such a big influence on me growing up. And then after
how many years older is your brother than you?
He's 8 years older than me.
Oh, so
like,
he's your hero. Right?
Yeah,
like,
man. He was
your big brother hero.
That's right. He used to come home from his benders, and him and his buddies would tell me all their fighting stories and other stories about women and stuff like that. So I was like, let's say I was 12 years old. I'm at home. It's summertime. I'm watching Andrew Dice Clay's The Dice Man Cometh. It's something I shouldn't have been watching, but I had zero guidance whatsoever. My brother and his buddies would come home with 40s and whatever else, and they would chill and tell me all these stories about how they got all, you know, they got all drunk and whatever, partied and started fucking these guys up. And I would be like a little kid, like, oh man, like the bar was kind of set low for me. You know what I mean? Like if somebody tells you like your goal in life is to be a sociopath, like you're just like, oh man, it looks so cool. Yeah, I could smash a 40 bottle over somebody's head too. And it's probably not good, buddy. You know?
Dude, no, I 100%. Bro, when you're younger, right, and like like, dude, like one of the old heads, like even if it's not even like a neighborhood old head or something like that, like takes time to even talk to you, they're your damn hero. Like they're the coolest guys in town. You
I'm
know?
Telling you. Yeah, and they impart that knowledge on you that nobody else is willing to share. That those adult, you know, not secrets, nothing weird, but those adult like little nuggets of wisdom. Like, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, nobody expects to left. So who the hell's gonna tell a little kid that?
Yeah, nah, dude. Like, and they're like cool, you know, and like then you're talking to your buddies the way they're talking. You know what I mean? Like, you turn in like you kind of want to turn into that guy. Yeah, no, for sure, dude. I totally see that. And it was the same, you know, very similar. You know what I mean? Like, I remember my one buddy, he had two older brothers that we just thought they were like, I don't know. I have a bunch of buddies that their older brothers we thought were just the coolest, man. Like, super good athletes, always chicks around. Like, they always dressing in cool clothes and stuff, you know? But, yeah. What are you going to
I
do?
remember
so,
my brother got me Mad Dog. You guys remember Mad Dog, don't
oh,
you?
Oh, heck 2020. Yeah. Do you know
First
what
time I
the
ever tried
MD
on a day
stands
load.
for?
It's the name of the guy who made it, right?
Yeah, Mogan
I don't know what his
David.
name is. That's it?
Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going.
So the first time I had Mad Dog was also the first time I had a day load. My brother came home with bottles of Orange Jubilee and grape. And he gave me and my two buddies, and he let us split the Orange Jubilee. He's like, listen, you got to put it on the rocks. So we're like, okay, whatever that means. So he gave us each a glass of Mad Dog. And we were 13 years old, and we guzzled it like it was our job. And we went out in the middle of the day, walked around town, just annihilated. And I'm like, oh, my God, if my son, if somebody did that for my son, I would freak out right now. As a parent, I'm not sure how I would deal with that situation. But you know, it was just me and my brother. Nobody was home. And you know, it's just something that we did back then. I mean,
you know. You get away with that stuff, dude. When you went outside, you're in the jungle. No parents there. Like, you just go out, dude. Like, there's so much stuff you're getting up to, like setting stuff on fire and, you know, causing all kinds of mayhem. And, dude, you remember Ding Dong Ditch? Right?
Yeah, I love
absolutely.
That.
Oh my God.
You remember
Ding
the
Dong
wildly
Ditch?
Inappropriate name for that?
Yes, I do remember. I
Good,
mean,
we won't discuss it.
Yeah, those were different times, man. 80s and 90s were different times. And
big
like
time.
we were latchkey kids. Like, were you guys
Same.
Latchkey kids?
Big time. Oh yeah.
I was, man. That had a lot to do with our generation.
So
I didn't even know that was a term. I just thought like
it wasn't
that's
a term.
Just what everyone did.
I remember
now,
my
it's
mom.
The boomers, dude. They left us all home alone.
I was 10, and my mom told my brother that I was now in charge of him to take him from the elementary school to home. I had the latch and the key. And he was like, you cannot do this. You're a madman, woman. He'll kill us both.
Yeah.
But
we
so
have to
then
walk five
I've,
blocks, and this,
so
this is what you want to do.
There used to be an after school program called BASE. And so the one time my dad comes to pick us up on Wednesday because they were divorced. So every Wednesday he would come pick us up. We were fighting on the front porch. And that's when my dad found out that we were like walking home alone. So then it became that we were latchkey kids except Wednesday. I was allowed to walk home Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, but my father had to pick us up from base after school.
What?
Because my mom was like, look, I'm not picking you up from that place. Like, just walk home. But your dad doesn't think you're old enough to be latchkey kids. So you have to pretend that you're not on Wednesday.
That is the best. Man,
there was something with
funny.
The boomers, dude. They left us at home because we were like the first generation that had both parents that were working, right? Because it was just after women's lib and the 70s where women started to go to work more. And we had our cartoons when we got home. Nobody knew if we did our homework or not. I didn't.
No, no. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when we were teenagers, dude, they called us reckless. I was called all kinds of shit because I just started getting in trouble. Like, they did not think I was an intelligent guy. I ended up, like, I wrote a book and one of my teachers from high school came to visit and get it signed. She's just like, Ryan, we did not think you were the person who wrote a book. And I'm like, hey, it's just, I got put in a group home for a little while when I was in 10th grade because of my behavior. And they called me all kinds of things that were just incorrect. Like, I just grew up in a dysfunctional family and I had problems with emotions. And they put me on medicine. Like, there's the character Alex, they put him on lithium. And he ends up drooling on himself. And they kind of did something similar to me, dude.
I know a kid with a very similar issue to that. And to this day, like, I look at him and he's gone. Like, it's not him anymore.
Yeah, dude. He just couldn't wake up. I fought back. And the best thing I ever did was get into school. I got into a 4-year tech school to study plumbing and HVAC, and they let me in based on like my family. I was a plumber, so they wanted me to build on what I had. I was really lucky that way. And when I was away from home and at school, I had a chance to build myself and become a better person.
Yeah, because it was home in the
It was home. Yeah, you're right. It was all those old things.
And it's hard to admit and like accept as a kid, because like you're like, no, I'm normal. This is fine. And then you get out into the real world. You get away from that.
Yeah.
You start telling people stories or talking to other people when you're young. And you're like, everyone didn't do this? And like, no, no one. Very few people have to do that.
Yeah.
You grew up like an animal. I was like, I did?
I did too.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know what that feels like, man.
Yeah, it's children of alcoholics. It's usually a common thing.
Yeah, yeah. Most of my dad's business was made at the bar. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he's not.
No, but they're
sure
also.
I'm like, sure he's drunk right now, actually.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like you said, like you can look at the good or you can look at the bad. Like, yeah, I was the child of an alcoholic as well. So like a bunch of shit was bad. But I'm really good at darts.
Yeah.
I stopped playing darts when I was like 11 years old. I didn't start again until I was like 21. We were in a bar one time playing drunk, and I was like, oh, holy shit. I forgot I've done this 1,000 times. I'm so good at darts, only from playing from the age of like 7 to 11. But, yeah. You know,
it you guys mentioned character. Video games earlier. I remember going to the bar with my dad because my parents were divorced, and he would just take me out. And I remember him giving me handfuls of quarters. He's like, just go. And he'd be sitting there chilling at the bar with his buddies, and I'd be playing on video games, doing whatever I wanted to do, and it was great, man. Yeah, those were the times.
Yeah. You look back on that fondly, right?
But
I mean, it is nuts. You know, like, I've taken my daughter to, like, I worked at this bar for a long time, so, and my brother still works there, and, like, I've taken my daughter in there to visit my brother, you know, while they're working. Like, I take my godson and my daughter in there, and, like, they're running around playing and doing all this stuff, and it's like, I remember thinking, like, damn, is this good? I'm not sitting here drinking while they're doing it, you know? Like, they're just coming to visit, you know?
It's not a smoking bar.
Also, it's not like we weren't there for 9 hours, you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know, we might have been, dude. Some of those memories get repressed.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, I mean, you know, so I want to go get a little history on you. So where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born at Chestnut Hill Hospital in Philadelphia. My parents, I was born, my parents lived in Erdenheim, which is right where my office is now. It was the house across the street. It was my great grandfather's farm. And during the Depression, he lost some money. So he subdivided it all and built houses for his family members. And my dad ended up buying one of the houses when he got married to my mom. And we lived there for a little while. And then when they got divorced, I moved around like a lot. And I didn't settle down until I was like 12 years old, where he lived in Ambler. And then I went to Upper Dublin High School and graduated from there.
Okay. What is the business, or what business are you in now? I guess we should ask.
We have a family business. It's plumbing and heating. My great grandfather started it back in 1919 in the same exact horse barn that I operate out of today, which is really cool. I'm very proud of that. I worked hard and working hard to preserve that for my nephew to take over, and maybe my kids. I don't know what they're going to do.
It's a great trade. It is a great trade, man.
It is, trades, dude. But I'll tell you what. First thing this morning, I was laying on an old man's tile floor replacing his toilet. And it's a little slice of hell once in a while, too. So.
Yeah, for sure. You got to take the good with the bad. You know?
I know you do.
Yeah. But hey, man, it's all part of the job. Go ahead, Justin.
I was gonna say, I deal with like older patients, so it's like for every nice, beautiful house that you would be comfortable laying on their carpet and checking their equipment out, there is a house that you're like, I would like a hazmat suit before I will enter into this place.
I know. You guys mentioned how you hated cats and dogs earlier, right, Matt? You said you didn't like cats and dogs.
Yep,
yeah, that's Matt, not me specifically, not me at all. Normal.
Yeah,
right. Loving.
No, it's not. You're not normal. You're not normal.
I'm very normal. Like
cats
and
dogs.
Loving.
All right.
Yeah,
all animals like me.
Bad cat allergy. It's hard because when you work in people's houses,
definitely allergic.
You break out. You go home. You're miserable. I actually bought a cat. I have a little dog, but we bought a cat last, we adopted a cat a year ago. And since then, he's been the best allergy medicine I've ever had in my life. I mean, we clean his litter box every day, whatever. So he's clean as we can make him, but I've like, it just, it cured me. I can't explain it. It was so lucky.
What, you just like become immune by association?
That's right. It's almost like how they give you shots. Like they give you little doses of the allergen at a time. It was terrible for me. They used to have to shoot me up with adrenaline and stuff like that. It was terrifying. Like my palms and the bottoms of my feet would itch. And the allergist would give me shit. She's like, why are you telling me that? I'm like, what do you want me to do here? But ever since I got the cat, like I guess he's a Siamese, so he might be a hypoallergenic. I don't know.
Yeah.
But my stepmom, when I was a kid, had a cat and it was a Siamese. And it's the only one I've never been allergic to. So I'm like, you know what? There might be something there. So I adopted a cat and I got better. This was brilliant because it's been like the hardest thing for me to deal with is to go into really nasty houses a lot of time where people who have like 5 or 6 cats. It's like the hardest for me to deal with.
Yeah.
One I can tolerate. 5 is hard.
Yeah, dude. I'm like deathly allergic to cats, big time. Not good with cats. So, okay. So you grew up in the Ambler area, and what kind of sports were you doing growing up? I see here, Justin, if you can listen for 1 second, you big loudmouth buffoon. We got another wrestler on the show. Yeah. Wrestling. We big up wrestling on this show. Big fans. Where'd you wrestle? Upper Dublin?
I wrestled Upper Dublin. Yep.
What year did you graduate?
97. I'll tell you a good wrestling story about when I was a kid and when I won my first match in 7th grade. My brother and my dad were both great wrestlers. My dad had like the Springfield Township. He had the Springfield Township School District, the fastest pin for like 30 years. So yeah. I moved around a lot, didn't play sports, didn't have a chance. I was always bouncing around. So when I finally moved in with him and I moved up for Dublin, went to Sandy Run, he's like, all right, it's time you join the wrestling team. I'm like, all right, fine. So I joined the wrestling team and it was like 3 or 4 times I lost. I was so disappointed because people expected so much out of me. Cry. You don't cry. Like that's, don't do that.
I mean,
I did.
Yeah, I mean,
and then after we wrestled Abington and then I won. I pinned the kid. I got up and I said, yes, I won. And there were people in the audience who stayed with me. And one of my buddies, Rick Johns, ended up becoming the captain of the football team. And Rick was this big, loud dude, and he became Homecoming King. So everybody knew him. And whenever he'd see me in the hallways, even 5, 6, 7 years later, he would say, yes, I won, from all the way down the hallway. Everybody back up. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, dude, that's great. Nice, man. That's fun. Dude, wrestling, I mean, it's a great sport. We say, you know, I tell everyone it's training for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? I'll tell you what, like at the gym, I'm the head boxing instructor at the Henzo Gracie PA Academy in Hatfield. And one of the big things
there, same people then. Okay.
So all the kids that come in, they're like, I want to fight. I want to do this. So I was like, dude, you're at your age, you're when, you know, 9th grade, best thing you can do is join your high school wrestling team. I tell all the kids that the best thing you can do if you want to fight MMA, number one thing you can do if you're able to, join your high school wrestling team. Because one, it'll train you for like the rigorous training schedule. Well, it won't train you fully, but it'll help you build the mental strength and physical stamina you need to be able to train for this stuff. And it'll let you know if you like doing it. Because another rule we had, like, I'm a big fan of this boxer named Gabriel Rosado. And he has a saying about fighting. He says, if you don't love fighting, don't fucking do it. Right? And it is the absolute truth. And I tell these kids all the time, dude, you're going to find out if you love it or not. And if you don't fucking love it, don't fucking do it.
Well, there's a rush that goes with it, right? I don't know if it's fear. I don't know if it's anxiety. I don't know if it's rage or courage or whatever. But there's definitely a rush. And if you like the rush, like you said, go for it. If you don't like the rush, I never liked the rush. So I mean, I excelled at it because I pushed myself to, and I forced myself to get used to it, but I never liked it. You know what I mean? Yeah. As an adult, like I train, but I'm not going to get in the ring. I just train for my health, you know?
Yeah, dude, I'll tell you the nerves before a wrestling match cannot be equaled. It's so bad.
I described that in my book too. in the first chapter of my book, the main character gets into a fist fight outside of a frat house. And I remember the cold. I would be freezing my ass off in a singlet in the middle of the gym, but then I'd be sweating, and these cold beads of sweat drip down your sides. I'll never forget that. Right?
Nothing. Like, there, honestly, like, I started wrestling when I was 7 years old, right? And nothing prepares you for the fear and like anxiety you get for like waiting to wrestle or for a wrestling match. It is so nerve-wracking. I remember I talked to my sister the other day. Because, like, you know, she talked about my niece being, like, nervous. I was like, yeah, she probably got nervous. You know, she was swimming. So that's, it's not the same, but it is individual, right? But she was, like, really nervous. And my sister's like, I don't know. I didn't know what to tell her. I've never dealt with that. I was like, well, yeah, you only ever play team sport. Who the fuck gets nervous for a team sport? You know? Like, you're out there to have fun and do it. Like, you can get nervous, bro. Yeah. But it's not even you can get nervous as far as like, oh, we got a big game, but you know, like you get nervous, but you also get hyped up because you're hyped up with your team. You know what I mean? So like your nerves can be checked by like your team camaraderie and stuff like that. For wrestling, yeah, there's team camaraderie and stuff, but
you walk out there alone.
And agreed. Once that whistle blows, man, it doesn't matter if you're scared. It's just you and your opponent. That's it. Yeah. You got to do it or just flop over on your back and take the pin.
Dude, yeah, when you're out there with a guy who's bigger, stronger, and faster than you, there's not a whole hell of a lot the team's going to do for you. I'll tell you that.
You're on your own.
You know, you're on
your own.
That's
a life lesson, dude. You're on your own. Figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. So, all right. So you're getting into wrestling, lacrosse, powerlifting. You did some martial arts and boxing, which you're doing now. You're a student of King Malik Harris at King's Corner Boxing. So powerlifting. What were you doing there? What's going on with that?
So I trained with Joe Bracca. He's from Ambler. He was my coach for 7 years. Maybe I was about when I was 19 up until I was like 24. So it's 5 years. So he had me. I broke a junior state bench press record. I was 148 and I bench pressed 275. And I squatted 315 and deadlifted 385. I missed 400. I tried to bench press 300. I missed that. I'm 5'5".
So you were just a big pile of freaking muscle.
I was just 148 pounds. I guess I looked bigger than I was, but that was the one thing. I just wanted to push myself. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to see what I could do.
You wanted to get that pump, babe.
And it was important, man. I just felt good. I was in the gym. I was doing good things with myself. You know what I mean? I was not.
You ever do any tests or any steroids or anything?
Nah, creatine. You know, that was big.
That's not cheating.
That's everybody. That's,
you're not in the MLB.
Yeah,
the,
you remember creatine? You would pour it in grape juice and stir it up real fast because it was standing and chug it down. So you
that's before they had those ball things in the shakers. That's back in the day.
Yeah.
The shake it yourself. The baseline for strength is like, can you bench press your own body weight? You were at what, 148 almost, bench double your body weight?
Almost. I curled my own body weight at that point in my life. My party trick in college is I was 148 pounds. I would curl 150. I could do it like twice, and I had bicep tendonitis for years. It was stupid, but I was like,
but it was worth it.
It was worth it, dude, because my guns were like checks, awesome.
Yeah. I can
you're
curl my body weight.
Crazy.
Meanwhile, they talk to me like I was a meathead. You know what I'm saying? Just how it goes down.
Hey, man.
But,
greatness comes in all forms.
Yeah, dude. You know, that was what we did back then. But now I didn't. I had buddies try to get me to do like a cycle or two of steroids, and I never wanted to. Like,
I would put any drug in my nose, but I would not mess with it would affect your testicles and your pee-pee, and I didn't want that.
Dude, do you remember man tits from Fight Club? That's what I kind of think I was always afraid of.
Bacne scared me. I never had bacne, and I was like, that sounds, it's not worth it.
Yeah, and then there were the stories about The Rock when he couldn't go out like to his wrestling matches. He had to wear a shirt because he was getting like his pectorals drained or something like that. Like that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. Oh, like they filled with fluid?
Yeah.
Whether it was real or not, but he did not go out like a wrestler without a shirt on for like 2 or 3 years. And I think that's the reason.
Well, yeah. Remember he wore like, it was like Adidas like tearaway pants and he had like this like mesh shirt.
Yeah, I didn't know that was on purpose.
If you remember The Rock, like his body, like when he initially came out, he had a lot of extra like, you know, fat and tissue on his chest, you know, and he ended up having to get that like drained or removed, and he had to wear that shirt to cover that up. Yeah. That was a big thing. Dude, I mean, like, also think about this though, dude. Back then, like, what did you wrestle at? What weight?
I wrestled all over. I was like 140 and 148 when I was a junior, and then I wrestled 127 to 132 when I was a senior. Okay. So they shifted me around a little bit. They changed the weights too when I was a senior. Like, they went from even numbers to odd numbers or something like that. Mm. I don't know. There's something strange.
What was your toughest weight cut?
My toughest weight cut was getting down to 127. I remember wrapping myself in trash bags, and they told you not to do that. Like, wink, wink. Don't do that.
Right. And then the coach was like, hey, here's the bags. Yeah.
Yeah. And I ran around until I made weight, and then we went to like a tournament.
Want to use hefty bags.
Yeah.
And wimpy.
And I sucked this weight. My coach told me to suck the weight because he wanted me to wrestle with some kid who was ranked.
In the intelligencer?
I didn't do well, dude. I lost.
I was tired. I was dehydrated. Yeah. And I had to wrestle someone who was better at wrestling than me.
All I was thinking about was peanut butter and jelly sandwiches afterwards and bananas and shit like that. Yeah. I wasn't worried about it.
Well, dude, it's wild, like, the amount, like, you know, like, when I was still fighting, I stopped fighting right as, like, the nutrition era was coming in. You know what I mean? And it was, like, so Jordan was still fighting pro at the time, or he was just about, or he had already had a pro fight, I think. But me and him, like, we would do camps together, and, like, you know, I remember, like, I was still cutting weight, like, the wrong way. I remember I had a fight, the fight was on a Saturday, and I was 14 pounds over on Thursday, right? And I made the weight, like, but it was 2 days to cut 14 pounds. So, like, I was dehydrated. I was, my muscles had atrophied. Like, it was so bad for me. Like, you didn't eat. You worked out a ton. I'm running in my plastic suit. I remember the day before I worked in open to close, right? And my mouth, I was so dehydrated that when I talked, I wasn't generating enough saliva. So, like, my mouth would dry out and I couldn't, like, pronounce the words I wanted to say, you know? But
I ended up, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I ended up making the weight, but right after I made the weight, I ate an entire box of, like, Uncrustables and drank, like, a ton of Pedialyte, and I was, like, lethargic. I was so, like, just, like, ugh. And I remember Jordan, me and him were fighting on the same card, and he looked at me, he's like, dude, you're not going to feel good. And I was like, I don't give a shit. You know, I was just so hungry. But that was right at the time when nutrition was coming in as a form of weight loss, right? And I remember him telling, like, dude, I remember being like, this fucking idiot doesn't know what he's doing. But he's like, dude, I'm eating five times a day. I've never been lighter. I feel great. I'm lean. My muscles feel good. Like, I'm not swollen and, you know, like, all this stuff. And I'm like, what? Dude, you're out of your mind. Turns out that's what everyone does now. You know what I mean? It's like, you know.
It turns,
like,
out not just starving yourself to actual death. And then, you'd hear those stories of, like, dudes who would, like, weigh in at 160 and then, like, the fight would happen. They'd be, like, 183 24 hours later. You're like, how is that possible?
McGregor did that.
Yeah, like, because all of a sudden,
eat like maniacs at night.
Or just water alone is like seven. They have no water in their body when they weigh in. And it's like 7 pounds of water, 14 pounds. And you're like, that can't feel good to weigh 14 pounds heavier the day you did before yesterday.
So I think when I did my powerlifting competition, that was the most I ever sucked. I was 168 and I had to get down to 148. So it was 20 pounds and I did Herbalife. Like, I was drinking shakes and I met this lady who was one of my customers. She's like, you got to do Herbalife. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I tried it and I was drinking black coffee because I didn't want any cream, no sugar. And I was drinking shakes 3 times a day and eating like clean meat and veggies. And I got down, but that was the most weight I ever had to lose. It was worse than wrestling, I remember.
Yeah. I mean, how long did it take? Do you remember?
I probably did it in like 6 weeks, I think. I think I took my time.
But you were like, you were in hell because you're eating is this Herbalife shit, and you're like, it was miserable, right?
No, it tastes like dirt. I would mix it with like natural peanut butter and bananas, I think she told me I could use, but it worked. Still,
it wasn't, yeah.
But nah, it was it was miserable. It just
dude,
wasn't.
I mean, like, anyone, you know, great. I remember when I was a senior in high school, I was like, dude, I'm going to do Slim Fast this year. And I would just do one can of Slim Fast a day was all I would eat. You know what I mean? And I
do you remember sports weight. Shakes from 7-Eleven? Do you remember those things?
Dude, yeah. Do you remember All Sport, the drink? All Sport?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That stuff
for
was 10K. So bad. What were you going to say, Justin?
Do you remember the Slim Fast, like the original Slim Fast cans? They came in like a thick, heavy aluminum can.
Yeah, it was like a soup can.
With like that single thin pop top. Yeah. And I remember, so we got like five boys in the house. My mom's like buying Slim Fast, and the bottom drawer is just Slim Fast of the fridge now. And it's like spoken that like this is not to be consumed by anyone other than her. And yeah. I got on a strict, like in the morning, shake them bad boys up. Like when they first came out, they weren't bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the banana one was good. Yeah.
Always chocolate, but like we would get to a point where I would like crush one in the morning, and then I would also like a nice like 12:30 snack, sneak downstairs, crack a Slim Fast. And I remember her like freaking out. Like we would have these meetings where everyone has to sit down in the same room. She'd be like, "One of you fucks gotta stop drinking my Slim Fast. I have nothing in this house. All right."
Also, like Justin, if you're drinking those and not working out like that, and you're still eating other stuff. You're
I was like 10.
You probably were just a hefty boy at that time.
People were like, "Yo, why are you having trouble making 105? So I'm like, "Look, I'm crossing two Slim Fasts a day and I'm getting public school lunch. I'm living a good life."
Yeah.
I'm almost like, 6 feet tall.
These healthy milkshakes. This is great.
I'm 5'10. Yeah. I'm in sixth grade and I'm full of Slim Fast. It's sick.
I remember wrestling the skinny, lanky guys. Dude, you guys were so difficult to wrestle because I'd be trying to get in close and push me back.
Yeah. When I wrestled as a freshman, I wrestled 189. Then as a sophomore, I wrestled 145. And then as a junior, I wrestled 89 again. And then as a senior, it was the first year they implemented the 215 weight class. And that's what I did. So your boy was all over the place. But so let's keep it moving. It's enough wrestling talk. But let's keep it moving. We are coming closer to the top of time. I want to talk again about American Dysfunction, man. This book, it's, you know... It centers around one character, right? Who's like from a tough blue collar family that has its, you know, has its dysfunctional side and things like that. But so give us a real, you know, retrospect. So Alex Walker is the name of the character, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like you're doing, is it like a chronological version of his life? Like coming up through like, you know, the 90s era, you know, living with boomer parents and things like that? Or how does it go?
So I shook things up a little. His parents are Gen X. Like his parents are first wave Gen X. And so he graduates high school around 2018, 2019. So he's really a millennial.
Okay.
So I mixed up our generations a little bit. But yeah. I started with him in college, and then he has flashbacks throughout the book to his childhood. So like when it's relevant, when he's in the moment or having an issue, he flashes back to something that reminds him of difficult times when he was growing up.
Yeah.
So that's So I did the each chapter like if you guys read Game of Thrones, I don't know, but each chapter
I did. I read all of them several times. Yep. I'm a maniac about it.
So each chapter is from the perspective of a different character, and you really get into their heads, and it's very psychological. Mm-hmm. I tried to do the same thing in my book, and I really think that getting into their heads allowed me to flesh out the characters and make them so much more than they would have been otherwise. Like the character Gina, who Alex gets into a fight over, and which sends him off on this adventure through the book. It's his girlfriend. She cheats on him with the school bully. At first, she was just like a throwaway character. I'm like, this girl's going to break his heart, then I'm going to move on. Well, I started writing from her perspective, and then she became one of my favorite characters in the book. Like, it was so important to me to make these characters human, no matter how shitty they were to each other. It's like, what motivates people to do these things to one another when they there's clearly love? You know what I mean? Like, how does that happen? Yeah. You know, it's just real. Like, this is what people go through.
I love it. I mean, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. We had another author on this show recently. His name's MP Kidd. and he did like a sci-fi fiction novel, and it's you know, it's a really good one. But he did the same thing. He said the same exact thing where he had this minor character that he was going to make a throwaway character, right? Like a throwaway female character that he ended up just falling in love with. And she just stayed for, and like, she becomes like a pivotal part of the damn book. You know what I mean? So like, it's funny how that happens, where it's like, it just sneaks up on you out of nowhere. And you know, like, hey, this one's sticking around, right?
But as like a bro-y guy, you know what I mean? Like, getting into the head of a female character is such a mountain to climb. Like, I realized how much of a chauvinistic pig I've been my whole life. Because as soon as, like, because I was in this writer's club with these professors from Arcadia University. And the one guy read the first chapter, and I was trying to write the book at that time. And he's like, listen, he's like, women don't think like this. He's like, and he's the one who told me, he's like, write from her perspective, get into her head, and you're going to figure out like what her voice is. And he was right, man. Like, I changed as a person when I did that. Like, I grew up a lot. It really molded me into the person I am today.
Dude, that's great.
Right?
Nice. You got into it. Yeah, man, that's an incredible thing. You know, like, how fun is that too, to be able to explore that other side? So nice. So like, you shared the story in the beginning about the situation with your stepfather and your mom. And then you also talked about, you know, your brother losing his life to an opioid overdose. Right. So like, there's those type of stories in this book, but is there some other stuff too? Like maybe some funny stuff, because you did also talk about like the need to, you know, remember the positives. So is any of that in there as well?
All right, here's the thing. So after he gets into this fight with, you know, over this girl, he gets put on probation. He has to do his public service at the library. So he meets this new girl, and they end up hooking up in the library, and they get caught.
Oh, yeah.
The librarian catches him.
Yeah.
And she, you know, the librarian says, you know, get out of here. So they kick the girlfriend out, and the librarian says to Alex, listen, I'm not going to turn you into the cops and get you in trouble, but you're going to be a naked muse for elderly art class every Saturday until your public service is over. So he has this moment where he's like, oh my God, it's so cold. It's so cold. He gets up there in front of all these old people, and he flicks off his overcoat, and he's fully nude, and some lady starts laughing at him because he's got shrinkage. He's up there.
That's great.
So
George Costanza shrinkage.
Yes, right. But it's called The Ballad of Alex Walker, because throughout his story, he falls in love with these girls, and it's not reciprocal. So he starts writing poetry because he's an artist. And he ends up becoming the manager of a 90s tribute band in this book. These are his friends that he meets in school. And while he's a manager, the lead singer is like, listen, I know Alex is a poet. We're going to have him put together a song, and we're going to become one hit wonders. And that's the Ballad of Alex Walker. He writes this song for.
Hell yeah. Dude, I love that. That very creative, but also had like a lot of realism to it. That sounds like a lot of fun. So like we said, in the description of this episode, there'll be a link for American Dysfunction. Make sure you check it out. It's rated a 4.8 out of 5 stars. So yeah, make sure you check it out. It's available in paperback. Do you have plans to do an audio version?
So I want to re-release the book, and when I do, there should be an audio version that's available. And I have the second one, which is the direct sequel, and the third one written. The third one takes place 30 years in the future. The second one takes place simultaneously with The Ballad of Alex Walker, but it's from the perspective of Scott Miller, who's a professional wrestler named Captain Planet. So that's the second one that's going to be coming out. Captain Planet's a villain, by the way. He's not a good guy. He calls people littering scumbags. And that's his deal.
I like that.
Dude, I love it. But I want to keep it moving. We are coming towards the top of time. Before we get out of here, J-Dub has some questions for you. So we're at our new favorite segment. It's J-Dub's question segment. So Ryan, Justin here is going to hit you with some questions and, you know, have some fun. Go ahead, Justin.
I was at the bar the other day, and someone tried to tell me that Transylvania wasn't a real place.
It is a real place. It's in Romania.
Yeah.
100%.
I was like, what do you think? This is like Narnia? What's wrong with you?
How could you grow up watching vampire movies and not know where the real Dracula lived?
Once, you know, another time when I was much younger, in a bar in Lansdowne. Remember the Junction House across from the train station, man?
I used to work. There was a restaurant next to it called Casa D'Amici. I used to work at
Junction House is popping. But a woman one time looked at me in the face and said, don't you think it's crazy that the Titanic sunk in the Titanic Ocean? I went, what? She said, the Titanic sunk in the Titanic Ocean. I was like, the Atlantic Ocean? Are you, is that what you're, holy crap.
That's a tough one. That's
did you back from that. Did you get a sex talk as a kid?
My brother and my sister's boyfriend gave me a sex talk when I was 12, and they did it with Hustler magazines. It was probably one was of it? The worst conversations of my life.
They just showed you pictures and pointed like, is this, like, this?
That's a dick. That's a bajingo, and they're like, gonna be smushing.
Does she have bubble gum in her underwear? I don't understand what I'm looking at here.
Was it? Like, you'll figure it out. Was Penthouse or Hustler as a kid? One of them would have like piss stuff every once in a while. I remember being a kid and seeing it and being like, what the hell's going on here?
And then you were extremely turned on by it.
No, I'm not. No, that's weird. I also had another person, again, in a bar. Because that's the only place where I'll talk to other human beings. He was like, how crazy do you think it'd be if Jesus was born in Beijing instead of Bethlehem?
Well, I mean, Jesus probably wasn't white, so maybe he could have been.
Right. I know.
Imagine if really... Jesus was Asian.
Yeah.
Technically, he's African.
Well, Buddha was Asian. You know, something.
Right, you do you remember or recall the story of the mongoose, Rikki Tikki Tavi?
You know, had you mentioned that earlier, and I vaguely remember.
Could not tell you what the hell that is.
Ah, the mongoose that ate cobras. That sounds very familiar. I feel like it was a book too, was it not?
It was a book, and then they animated, but it was like the worst. Like it was like a like they would just show you like a picture, and a guy would talk. I'm gonna do more research. You are the victim of my first Rikki Tikki Tavi. Okay. Question, but I am gonna do more research on Rikki Tikki Tavi.
Legit, never saw Rikki Tikki Tavi. Don't know a damn thing about it. So
I
so
feel like good. We could find it on YouTube. Yeah. If we look yeah. for it tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure. Time. Yeah, there's books, but you know they're not as good as American Dysfunction, so don't bother.
All right, fair enough. What was the other one? They're Not Here to Save Us. That was our other guy. We had him more recently.
MP Kid. Yeah.
All right, quick. Quick two. Have you do you have any broken bones?
No, I don't. I broke a growth plate in my knee when I was 12 years old, and I had to have it all the way up to my hip. But that was it. The growth plates are the things under your knee that connect your I don't know, your leg bones. And apparently I fell when I was playing and at recess, and my knee swelled up like a softball. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And that was the only thing I've ever I broke my wrist when I was like 3. That was it.
Yeah.
Never back any compound fractures, nothing like that.
Oh, compound not fractures are a nightmare.
Yeah, no.
Back of a cop car?
Back of a cop car. Probably a couple of times. I never
uncuffed or cuffed. Sometimes I'll just stick you back there to figure out what's going on.
I was never cuffed. I don't remember ever being cuffed. If I was, I got out. My dad picked me up like an hour later, probably when I was 19. I think I drove into a checkpoint with 2 empty beer cans in behind my seat. And I think they cuffed me that night, and they put me on the sidewalk, and then they took me in, and my dad picked me. I was clean, so I didn't get in trouble. But
they were just old beer cans?
They were just old beer cans, I guess. I don't know what the hell they were doing in there. I guess I just dragged them behind the seat.
I was just telling my brother.
That's funny.
My brother came over to help me put up a ceiling fan. Literally on Monday, I was telling him the story of in the back of my car, I had a whole bunch of bottles. And a cop pulls me over and he's like, what are those? And I was like, what are what? And then he's like, the bottles in the back of your car. And I turned around and looked at him. I was like, they're all root beer bottles. I worked at Giant and I used to steal those Stewart's root, like glass brown bottle root beers.
Those
like,
are the good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I had like 15 of them in the back of my car. A cop pulled me and was like, what are all these? And I was like, I'm a slob. I'm not an alcoholic.
You're like, I'm a mess, you all right? You strunza, back off.
It's a cop trying to fill his quota.
Yeah, I bet.
You got to pull over a certain amount of people a month, I guess.
Ryan, right, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah. What was how old were you when you started wrestling?
I never wrestled.
My older brother. I'll
tell you what, as an adult, when people ask me if I want to study jiu-jitsu, I'm like, nah, I wrestled when I was in high school. I don't need those questions answered. Like, I just have no interest.
My older brother wrestled, and he would come home, and I'd be sitting on the couch just, you know, hanging out, having a good time, and he would start slowly pulling the coffee table away. And I'd be like, no, dude, I'm just about to go to bed. I was literally, I have school tomorrow. I was just about to go to bed, and he said, "You can run, but it'll make it worse. I'm going to teach you everything I learned today." And I did.
Was that Nick?
Yep. That was Nick. And
Nick's a good dude.
I'm not a bad wrestler, but I never technically wrestled.
Those moments for me ended up in body slams and elbow drops. Like it was not the wrestling that was functional on the mat.
Yeah.
His move was the lawn chair, where he put you on your belly, and then he put his butt on your butt. And then grabbed your arms and made it like feel like you were a lawn chair from the bottom, but he was sitting on top of you.
Isn't that kind of like the start of the recliner?
It was kind of like a reverse camel clutch.
Oh, okay, because you're facing his feet.
Yeah, like we're both facing opposite directions, but he's still.
And he would like grab your arms like he's putting on a backpack,
like an armrest, and he would call it the lawn chair.
That sounds like fun. Yeah. Also, too, I remember Nick was a big fan of Dan Severn at the time.
Big fan of the Beast.
Big fan of Dan Severn. Big fan.
I wrote 3 seconds. I watched. I was 15 years old. He was 19. We were working at a landscaping company, and I watched this like 28, 29 year old man kind of like getting a verbal spat with him, and they got in an argument.
Nick?
Yeah, with Nick.
Okay.
And they start fighting, and Nick throws this man to the ground, puts him belly down into the grass, grabs him by the back of his head, and rubs his face into the ground. And I remember watching this as like a 50-year-old, just white face, like, whatever happens, don't fuck with Nick.
No.
Whatever you do in your life, that... This dude was, it was a grown man working at a landscaping company, and he got his belly put in the dirt, and his face rubbed in the ground, and Nick pulled his hair back and was like, "You done?" Just rubbing his face in the ground.
What the?
And I was like, holy crap, that's the most intimidating thing I've ever seen.
Wow. And he was 19, and this guy was a grown ass man.
He's a full grown man.
Bro. But
like get in his car and like drive home to his family after working like a cash job.
Cried himself to sleep that night.
Yeah. He masturbated using his tears as lubricant that night.
Yeah, he sure did.
That was it for him. Yeah. So, all right, nice. We are coming towards the top of time. Ryan, Justin and I are usually on the same page as this, but we would love to have you back on the show if you'd be willing to come back on.
Let's do that. When this audiobook comes out, I would love to come back.
Love to have you back, brother.
I've only ever read The Hatchet.
It's okay. The audiobook, it's actually a fast read. Most people who read it, they finish it.
It's only 227 pages.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I judge it by words because that's how the publisher works. So it's like 92,000 words.
Yeah. Oh, that's nothing.
That makes it sounds way worse. 227 pages sounds way easier than 92,000 words.
It changes from the hardback to the soft copy. So I don't know. Whatever.
All right. So we are coming towards the top of time. Ryan, what would you like to say to your family, friends, and fellow Americans before we get out of here?
So we're Americans first. We are family and friends second, third. And I just want to extend a lot of love, even though there might have been hard times in this book and hard times with all the people I know and grew up with. Everybody's grown up, and it's all about just being happy and having my wife, my kids, and waking up every day and feeling better than I did the day before. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, how much like I tell my wife all the time, like this legit is the best my life has ever been. In my whole life, like, living with, and it's not the easiest life ever, but it's legit the best it's been. Like, I have my daughter, I have my wife, we have a home, right? Like, I worry about, like, when this is all going to go away every day. I was like, what am I going to do that this all goes away? You know what I mean? So, like, I tell her all the time, like, we have so much to be thankful for that life is so, like, we're so blessed. You know what I mean? So
I agree.
I'm with you, dude. I'm with you.
As we're getting older, we get happier and happier because we made the right decisions. And I think that's a real thing.
And I agree, dude. I made a million bad decisions. Don't get it twisted. Your boy was making bad decisions. But, you live, you learn, you get loves, and then you move on. You know what I mean? So... Nice. J-Dub, what do you got before we get the fuck out of here?
We're Americans first, we're friends and family second, we're circumcised third, and then the uncircumcised are fourth. Because they're animals.
Why is the uncircumcised fourth?
Because they're animals.
They have mutant wontons.
Because they got that calamari ring that got stolen from me.
Snuffleupagus.
So, all right. Well, very good. Speaking of American dysfunction, this has been another episode of the Working Perspectives Podcast. I'm Matt Lavelle. He's J-Dub Justin Richardson. And our guest today is the one and only Ryan Rex. In case you're wondering, you can find all our stuff and all our content and all podcast platforms and YouTube at Working Perspectives Podcast. You can also on Instagram at Working Perspectives Podcast. You can join us on Twitter and TikTok at Working P Pod. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email us at workperspectives@gmail.com. And please like and subscribe so we keep bringing you this amazing content. Thank you for listening and have a good one. Thanks. See you.